the Purple Dinosaur Podcast with Tyler Mon and Anthony Masterson. Tonight, from Fox Sports 1, CJ Nitkowski, the Rockies' rising walk rates, plus the latest good start from top prospect John Gray. Plus, updates on Tyler Matzik, Justin Morneau, and Kyle Freeland. Big fan of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, who has also assuredly never heard of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. It's the beginning of a new era. Anthony and I are taking over late night. And this, the first ever bi-coastal edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, is our announcement to you. We're taking over late night. That's it. Get excited.
I got the West Coast. You got the East Coast.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be like that, the hip-hop rivalry in the 90s, except it's going to be a lot more of a love fest. I'm going to cut that one off the pass right there. No.
Well, hey, actually,
You don't get to make that noise anymore.
Live from New York City, I'm Tyler Mon. Live from Los Angeles, California, he's Anthony Masterson. Hi, Anthony.
Oh, hi, Tyler.
Episode number 45 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, and we did come in today to the open from The Late Show with David Letterman because for the first time in our lifetimes, David Letterman will not be on late-night television next week, and that is very weird.
Yeah, it's
very weird.
Honestly,
those things are few and far between now that, like, you know, have happened all of our lives that are now not happening anymore because, you know, especially I am old, but it sucks.
No, it's really sad. I mean, I grew up on David Letterman. My dad actually attended Ball State University with Letterman. Letterman, I think, was 2 years ahead of him in school, but
in
Muncie, Indiana, they worked in the arts building together, and Letterman would do the weather for Ball State University, like, you know, in-house television. And so whenever we grew up, we always had Letterman on in the household. And Letterman is just like my dad. He's a farm-grown Indiana boy. And like it's
literally grown like he was a seed and then they watered him.
That's how it works in Indiana.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to see his facial features, his reactions, and how he laughs. It is almost uncanny to my dad's side of the family. Like, it's almost like I lost a family member when he retired. I was in tears, just bawling my eyes out watching the finale on Wednesday. So,
which was so good. The finale
was
awesome.
It was such an awesome finale, and it's amazing the influence that he had on comedians everywhere across the board, and how much respect they all have for him. You saw what everybody's tribute to him was. You know, Kimmel, he was he didn't even put a new show out that day. Like, Norm Macdonald went on the show on Friday and was like bawling through his stand up. Because it was his first time on TV. It was on Letterman back in the 90s. It's amazing to see the influence that he's had all around. And we're not going to see anybody like him in late night anymore.
Not for 30 years.
No, and the thing is with that, like, guys like Letterman and Leno, they grew up in comedy clubs, and so they were able to be as prickly as they wanted to be because they were, you know, used to people, you know, shitting on them all the time because they were in comedy clubs. And so they used to be able to have the give and take. And that's something that's not there anymore. Fallon and Seth Meyers, like, they're good at their jobs, but they've been on TV their entire lives. Their whole jobs are to please people and to try to be the nicest people in the room. And that's fine, and they're good at it. But there's never going to be anybody like David Letterman on late night television ever again.
When I was a kid, I remember watching Letterman. That was kind of my first exposure to late night TV, was watching Letterman. And then, you know, like, I got into high school and I liked Leno a lot for a while because, you know, that was like the target intellect of his humor. And then as I grew older, I was mostly like a Jon Stewart and a Stephen Colbert guy, but I was also, I still am, a massive Conan fan.
Yeah.
But Letterman always like laid the groundwork for that. Whenever I caught Letterman, I was like, God, this guy is such a genius, man. Like, the thing about Letterman is, you got to know something about the world to get David Letterman. You know, like, anybody can turn on Jimmy Fallon and be like, oh, I remember Saved by the Bell. This episode's hilarious. But to get David Letterman, you kind of had to know something about the way human beings are. And, yeah, we're never going to see – I mean, not only will we never see anybody who probably came the way he did to accomplish what he accomplished, but the longevity of that guy's career to do that for 32 years is unbelievable.
Yeah, and he started his morning show, his ill-fated morning show – like 2 weeks after my sister was born in 1980. So my mom, like for the whatever 2 months it was actually on television, she sat through every single one of those episodes in the morning before she went to school and watched with my like infant sister. So yeah, it's Letterman's been in my family forever. It was always such a thrill to be able to get up and stay up to watch his monologue and then have to go to bed after that, because in the Mountain Time Zone, Letterman was on at 10:30.
Yeah.
Everywhere else it's 11:30.
Yeah. Yeah, but, my mom used to let us watch up until the top 10 list, and then we had to go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was always such a thrill. So,
man.
It sucks that Letterman's not on the air anymore. But he went out on his own terms. You got to respect whatever how he wanted to do it, how he did it. He's the best. There's not going to be anybody else like him.
I'll be very interested to see how Stephen Colbert inherits that show.
Oh, and Colbert's going to be awesome.
He's going to be awesome. But I'll be interested to see what the format looks like for him.
Right.
Man, I tweeted the other day, like, every once in a while I'm just crushed with sadness realizing how much I miss the rapport so much.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see him on. But
and the new Daily Show coming up, whatever
that's
going
to be. Yeah, whatever that's going to be, like, Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
It's going to be – we're in a very weird, like, ground-shifting era for late-night comedy. And but, you know, the good ones are still out there, and then the ones who get ratings are still out there also. And they – you know, that Venn diagram doesn't really cross much. I just hate Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon is the male Taylor Swift to me. I loathe Jimmy Fallon.
Are we a Rockies podcast?
I think we're a baseball podcast. Well, you know what would be fun is doing a late night television podcast. Maybe we should do that next.
That's true. Yeah.
There's room for it in the Denver community.
There's a market there. But anyway.
So anyway,
welcome. Episode 45.
Episode 45, Anthony. Tell us who.
Oh, boy. We actually have a decent list of 45s in Rocky's history, starting with Scott Oberg this year. I'm not sure we want to dedicate a podcast to
too early.
Oberg.
Scott Oberg's career for that tremendous honor.
Yeah, Scott. I don't think you're ready yet for this podcast. Jolie Chassin, of course, 2009 to 2014. He is one of the finalists for the PDP edition. Recently tweeted at the podcast with Chris Christman.
He did.
Because Chris Christman was live tweeting the season ticket holder call between Weiss, Breidich.
How awesome was that? Chris Christman was the greatest.
Oh, that was absolutely
so
fantastic.
When he was tweeting it, I was like, wait a minute, is this a press conference? What's going on with this? Because I just landed. I actually am in New York right now. I just landed. Yeah. My niece turns one tomorrow, so we're having a birthday party for her. And I'm in the cab. I'm riding to my aunt's apartment on the Upper East Side. I'm looking at Twitter on my phone, and I see Chrisman tweeting all these tweets, and I'm like, wait a minute, did they call like a surprise press conference? What is going on here? I thought maybe somebody got canned. I didn't know. But no, it's just Chrisman tweeting the season ticket holder's phone teleconference, which was amazing.
Yeah, and someone was just so angry at Jolie Chassin for some reason.
Yeah, what was like, that all about?
I had no idea whatsoever. And so Chrisman tweeted that out, and Chassin tweeted back at him saying, really? People are so weird, but whatever. Miss you guys.
That was so strange. Yeah, some lady was like, I'm just glad. I love how Chrisman said, next question, and then it was, I'm glad you got rid of Chassin. I had my issues with him.
Yeah.
And somebody responded like, wait a minute, that's not a question at all, actually. And she was just this crabby old woman who didn't like Jolie Chassin. What?
So weird. Anyway, what's wrong with you? So he's a finalist. Then someone named Josh Newman, who wore the number for 2 years from 07 to 08. Do not know who that guy is.
Yeah,
Elmer Descends in 07.
Also, it's not like he came along in a time where we weren't focusing on this
team.
No,
exactly. Josh Newman.
He went to the World Series that year.
Okay. Mike Venafro in 06. Zach Day in 05 and 06. He was supposed to be good for a hot second. Javier Lopez from 03 to 05, who is still pitching.
But not that one.
Still very effective, which is baffling.
And I believe makes his home in the Denver area, too.
12 years later. Yeah, Victor Santos in 2002. Jerry DePoto, he's been in the news lately. 97 to 2000, the GM of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in Orange County, but not Seal Beach, but including Newport Beach. Mike Munoz and his mustache in 1995, which we already had an episode dedicated to him for episode 43. And then Curtis Laskanik, 93 to 94.
I like how they list him as Kurt.
I know. Kurt.
He was never Kurt.
Kurt Laskanik.
He was Curtis to us.
Yeah. I gotta go with Chassin.
Yeah, I think so too.
And it's a tribute to Joe Lys and what he's done for this organization. I think we can bestow the highest honor we possibly can upon a former Rocky.
This is like winning the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
The Purple Dino Podcast, episode 45, after one Joe Lys Chassin.
I would agree. I think the way that his days came to an end were quite disappointing. But
yeah,
I would totally agree that I think he is one of the guys who we like because he was good for a time.
there are not that many
of those guys, especially in the number 45 listings. I think our runner-up, I think our vice president of episode 45 would be Jerry DePoto, just for what a blowhard he's been over the last few years.
Yeah, what the hell, man?
Yeah. But don't tell Root we're getting after Jerry DePoto for dumping all over a...
Do you think that maybe has something to do with it?
I don't know.
I never thought about that, but that's a good point.
Maybe. That he's a former Rockies guy?
Yeah, former Rockies guy. He was there, 97 to 2000, and he was always, a gregarious guy with the broadcasts, I remember. Like, so they always liked to have him on, and Drew was there at that time. A lot of those guys were there then. I wonder if that's the case, if they were just defending Jerry DePoto.
Interesting.
I never thought about that, but there's something to it.
That could be, actually. Who knows?
Whatever. Anyway, speaking of Joe Chassin, he has made two starts for the Columbus Clippers.
Yeah.
Triple-A affiliate of the Cleveland Indians. Giving up eight runs.
He's
going to
go
into two-thirds. Oh, yeah.
He'll just go dominate. Not so far, but
he's still coming back from that injury, though, so he's only appeared in two starts, spending 10 2/3, but he's got a 6.75 ERA. So nowhere to go but down, Jolies.
Yeah, in the number. Nowhere to go but up in success.
Exactly. We've got a big show today.
We do have a big show today. Really big show.
Really big show.
Anthony, tell us who is coming up on the show today.
We have got one of the guys that I work with on MLB Whip Around, one of the best analysts in the business, in my opinion, one of the hardest working analysts in the business, in my opinion. Former big league pitcher CJ Nitkowski is on the show. He'll be live from Atlanta, so we are all over the map today. He is he lives in Atlanta, actually, but he's also in town to do the Brewers-Braves game for FS1 on Saturday.
But he also lives in Atlanta?
Yeah, he does.
So does he travel there to work with you?
Yes, he does.
Like somebody has to pay him, basically, in order to be in the same room as you.
Basically, he does everything.
I wish I had that job where somebody would have to pay me to talk to you because it's torture.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's torturous.
I mean, I can like Venmo you some money.
Can you send me Bitcoin?
Yeah. Remember when that was a thing for like a hot second?
Yeah, right? That was weird. And CJ's awesome, though. No, and CJ is definitely our most famous Twitter follower.
Yeah, he does radio shows. He writes for the Fox baseball website, Jabo. And he also does the color commentary for our game of the week on Saturdays. Like, I don't know when he ever sleeps. And I'm going to ask him that because I really want to know.
And as you pointed out on Twitter yesterday, he's like the most successful pitcher in Coors Field history.
I mean, it's hard to argue with the numbers. I mean, a 0.00 ERA in his career at Coors Field. Just saying.
That's pretty impressive.
Just saying.
It's over, like an inning and a third, but
Hey, you know what? Don't let the facts get in the way of a good fact-based narrative.
Like the Denver Post. Hey-o! There's room in this town for all of us. So the Colorado Rockies playing a little bit better baseball of late. Yesterday afternoon, a 7-3 victory over the Philadelphia Phillies. Jorge De La Rosa breaking strikeout marks in franchise history. Not a real great outing from Jorge De La Rosa, shall we say?
No, it was a historical because he threw 108 pitches in 4 1/3. Only the second pitcher in Rockies history to throw that many pitches in 4 1/3 innings or less. And the first since Brian Recar in 1996.
Brian Recar... so not real good, shall we say. Not what we would call good, necessarily. But, kept him in a game.
When I brought up the fact that he had broken the Rockies' record for franchise strikeouts in the MLB Whip-Around meeting yesterday, Kevin Burkhardt goes, wow, that means they have had a lot of shit in their history.
That means that they have been bad.
Because I sent out the top five, and like Jason Jennings is still in the top five in strikeouts for this franchise, and he was like, "I have not thought about these people in about 10 years." And I go, "I know it's all we have, guys."
I was on Tuesday, went into the our offices here, the MLB.com offices, the MILB.com offices at Chelsea Market in New York, and I recorded our minor league podcast with my good pal Jake Seiner, and we went out, got a beer afterwards, and we were talking, you know, just baseball. The Yankees were on in the bar we went to, and talking about Bryce Harper, and we're talking about, you know, all kinds of different things. Another one of our friends, Dan Marina, showed up, and Dan is actually a Yankees fan. Jake is from Pittsburgh, kind of more of a Pirates fan, but talking about the Yankees, and we were talking about Joe Girardi, and I said I wanted so badly for the Rockies to hire him back when the Marlins actually brought him on, which would have been 2005, I think, was that first season with the Marlins. You know, and he lasted 1 year and, you know, hated ownership, shockingly, in Miami. But we got to this discussion of how he's like maybe the greatest catcher in Rockies franchise history. And I was like, see, you people don't know what that's like here. Like, you don't know what it's like to have to look at Joe Girardi as a franchise luminary. Like, you get to, Thurman Munson and Yogi Berra and Jorge Posada. And we're like, yeah, I mean, remember that time J.D. Clauser started on opening day?
Yeah.
Cool. That's fun.
Like, that was
people
fun.
People don't get it.
Kit Pello. Get it. Started opening day once for the Rockies. Oh, Kit Pello. That's a real person.
And that's why there are people who you've like never heard of in the top five list in franchise and strikeouts.
It's amazing.
So it's exciting. Yeah. But but it's been a little bit better as of late. And Anthony, one thing that you very astutely talked about a lot last week, seems like maybe, I don't want to say it's turning a corner yet, but maybe it's approaching the corner. Maybe it's got its signal light on. They're like taking walks now.
Just
and they're not striking
bit.
Out quite as much.
I mean, they had a season-high 6 walks yesterday, and they didn't strike out at all yesterday either, which is one of the few times in history that's actually happened. I think the second time in franchise history they've had 6-plus walks and no strikeouts in a game. So you look at in the Phillies series, in the two games they won, they walked a combined 10 times. In the two games they lost, they walked a combined 1 time.
It's so, almost like there's something related in there.
I mean, in wins this year, they're averaging almost 4 walks a game. In losses, they're averaging just under 2 walks a game. And like we said, it's not all about walks, but it helps. It helps when you get base runners on base. And yesterday, stringing together base runners, stringing together hits, getting the bases loaded against a guy like Jerome Williams, who is not very good. He's not going to blow you away with anything. You got a couple of walks. You got a single, and then Tulo comes up, the base loaded, hits a ball up the middle, and it scores 2 runs. And then you score another run on another base hit. Like, this is how an offense is supposed to work. It's not how it has worked for the Rockies this season.
It is an offense that can be very powerful, as we said last week, if you make opposing teams pay for their mistakes. And the Rockies have not been able to do that as of yet. Now, you still have time to fix that.
Yes.
That's what I think the frustration for a lot of us stems from with, you know, the troll show and the whole season's dead, move the franchise. Did you see the thing that Ryan Kilpatrick posted the other day?
Yeah.
Of the guy who said they should move the team out. Denver needs a break for a little while from baseball, and they should convert Coors Field into an MLS franchise or an MLS facility.
What?
That is the – of all of the takes – that is the hottest and dumbest of takes.
Yeah, I think even Les Shapiro would go, whoa, pump the brakes.
Whoa, dude, let's calm down here for a second.
Pump the brakes here, little blogger boy.
Wow. So the, you know, when they are able to make other teams think about, like, oh, can't afford to walk this guy because we'll get burned, then obviously that's going to contribute to your success offensively. And there's still time to get it turned around. The Rockies are 8 games under 500. It is May 22nd. There's 4 full months of the season to go.
Yeah.
Do I think that they're going to go to the World Series? No, I don't think they're going to go to the World Series. But it's not like this team is just dead and buried. It's not like they've won 8 games so far this year. They're not the poor KT Wiz of the Korea Baseball Organization, as we'd drop that reference a few weeks ago, who started like 3-28. Like, they're not. Yeah. Come on.
No, there's plenty of room for improvement and time to get it done. And the good news is the bullpen has been very good over the last 9 games or so. A 1.66 ERA for the bullpen over the last 9. So there are things that are looking up even without guys like Adam Ottavino and guys like Boone Logan who are still pitching. Because that's not good.
Yeah.
Like, John Axford's been very good. Ken Roberts has been a surprise, a pleasant surprise, in his 7 games so far, an ERA of 2.16. You know, Bergman coming out of the bullpen and being the long guy has been excellent. Betancourt has been his usual Rafael Betancourt-ish self. I mean, really, and they got Brooks Brown coming back soon, too. It's been the worst guys are Boone Logan, pretty much. And really, he is...
The worst guys are...
The Boone worst Logan. Guys are Boone Logan. Because he's bad enough for a couple of relievers in that bullpen.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So...
Boone Logan is... He's not been what you would call...
No, I tweeted out after his blow-up, I think, in the first or second game of the Philly series. Or in the first game. He's got the second worst ERA, or at that point, the second worst ERA among all Rockies pitchers ever with at least 50 appearances.
Sweet.
Only Esmiel Rogers was second.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Esmiel Rogers, who I believe is still pitching.
He with the Yankees.
Yeah, with the Yankees now. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I saw him. Right. Yep. That's good. That's good.
So, you know, there are things to look forward to. And we're going to hit a little bit of that later. So
ERA of 3.12 this season for Esmiel Rogers. So...
Yeah,
and he went the year he left the Rockies in 2012. He made 44 appearances for the Indians that year, 3.06 ERA.
And then they flipped him for Yan Gomes.
You know what I find interesting too, and this is something that is a topic for a whole another podcast. But the difference between being able to develop and coach up players and acquiring good talent. Because I think everybody dumps all over the Rockies all the time. They're like, oh, I don't even know how to pick up players. They draft terrible. They make terrible signings. They got to go get guys from Venezuela. But I think, you know, the Rockies bring in good talent. Do they develop that talent well? I think that's where the question really
is. Yeah, I think the jury's very much out on that one.
And has been for quite some time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a topic for a whole nother.
And
that
we talked about with Ben Bather a little bit, because they were able to bring, right, even when they bring in guys like Drew Pomeranz or Alex White, when they made that big trade, guys that were, you know, top prospects in other organizations who were supposed to be very, very good, and they brought them in there and they flamed out spectacularly and went to other places
and
did okay. So,
yeah. That's, well, you know. You got a player development director now as GM, and now he gets to call the shots, and that's why I think the next 3 years will really give you an idea of where this franchise is headed.
And if not, we can just make Jeff Breidich the acting manager. Just like,
yeah, why not? Miami. That's the thing that they do now.
It's worked out well so far. Do.
Sure, exactly. It's gotten well.
It's gotten really well, especially when he came out after the second game when he left in a left-handed pitcher to face A.J. Pollock, who only hits lefties, because he had a gut feeling
in a tie
game. And then A.J. Pollock hit a tie-breaking two-run home run, and they lost the game 4-2.
You know,
he said, man, my gut feeling just didn't really pan out that time, did it? And they go, no, it didn't.
It's like mind-boggling. And we can talk about this with C.J. Nowakowski a little bit, but like Chip Hale, a Diamondbacks manager, came out in an interview the next day and said, like, yeah, it's just really frustrating for guys who have spent their entire adult lives coaching in the minor leagues, managing in the minor leagues, trying to get to this position. Yep. But now when there are major league vacancies, they're just like, what former sort of fan favorite, gritty, scrappy player can we hand this job to with no coaching experience?
Can you?
Or if you're a GM, can you just make yourself the manager now?
Yeah, can you name the last manager with extensive minor league experience that was given a shot in the major leagues?
I feel like it happened one time semi-recently, and I cannot even remember who it was.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
Because we've worked in the minor leagues. We know how hard those guys work and what they want to do to become major league managers. They're not there because they feel like it.
Right.
They want to manage in the minor leagues so they can manage in the major leagues one day. And we hardly ever see that jump made.
It's very weird.
That's a great – we'll talk with C.J. Nowakowski about that when he comes on here in a second.
One thing we did want to touch on quickly, Rockies first baseman Justin Morneau on the 7-day concussion disabled list. His time on that list has actually expired, but he's not ready to come back to the team. He continues to experience post-concussion symptoms. Of course, suffered that concussion a few years back with the Minnesota Twins and has really never been the same since. I mean, last year obviously was very, very good, but health-wise, has never been the same since. And it's scary because that kind of stuff, you don't really know when it's going to come back. I mean, there's so much, you know, like you hear about concussions, obviously, with the NFL, but there's so much we don't know about the way that stuff affects you physically and mentally that it's kind of scary that this is several years later and Justin Morneau is still experiencing dizziness and some of the weirdness that goes along with a concussion. And he's yet still not ready to come back.
No, and he sat out for a majority of a couple of years due to concussion symptoms. I mean, it's scary. It really is. It's terrifying because if he's still having those kind of concussion symptoms, what, how many years after he actually got hurt, 4 or 5 years?
That was 2010, July 7th of 2010.
And he played in 81 games that year, then played in only 69 games the following season with concussion syndrome, as you know, concussion symptoms as well. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you can do to help it out. Because last year, like you said, he had a very successful season last year. He thought, okay, well, he's back, he's healthy, he's gotten past those concussion symptoms. You know, but you have to realize they're always going to be there now, which is, God, that's terrifying.
Yeah, it's not fun. It was a bouncing ball. They were on the road at Toronto. He was at first base. Michael Kadire hit a grounder. Morneau slid into second and took a knee to the head. And really has never been the same since. And, you know, it's scary that something like that, seemingly a relatively innocuous play, can just affect a career for that long. That is, ugh, yeah.
Yeah, so, it, you know, for the Rockies in the short term, they'll have Ben Paulson and Willian Rosario filling in at first base. Rosario has proven time and time again that he is just an atrocious defender. Wherever you put him.
Pretty much at any position.
But he's hitting .304.
Yeah.
With an .834 OPS. He's been very good at the plate so far this season since coming back from AAA. So that's a very good sign. You want to get his bat in the lineup, of course. But, man, you know, you just need to trade him to an AL team, like, as soon as possible. Like, you get that trade value up and then send him over to an AL team. Because Ben Paulson, I think he's done very, very well in limited opportunities at the big league level. He's not a guy who's going to make you write home and say, hey, Ma, I found the one. But he's a solid guy. He's always been a solid hitter, gap-to-gap guy, not a lot of power. But so far in 71 big league at-bats, he has a .942 OPS and 4 home runs. He hit .317 last year in 31 games, 63 ABs. So far this season, he's 4-for-8. I mean, you can give Ben Paulson a little bit of an extended shot here against right-handed pitching and see how he does. I think he's earned that. He was a minor leaguer for too long in the Rockies system. Now, I think you give him a chance here, and if not, you can call up Kyle Parker, too, who, by the way, is approaching free status.
Yep. Kyle Parker right now is in the midst of a 9-game hitting streak, and during that 9-game hitting streak, Parker is hitting .389, 14-for-36, couple of doubles, couple of homers, 5 runs batted in. He has lifted his season-long average to .218, his OPS to .619. Hasn't been a great year, but it looks like he's starting to find himself. However, as Stephen A. Smith would say, he's only played a handful of games at first base. He's played primarily left field, but, you know, we'll kind of see how that plays out. There is another former Albuquerque isotope we are going to talk about here shortly in Brandon Barnes, and another, presumably, at least as of right now, former Albuquerque isotope in Tyler Matzik, who we're also going to talk about. But before we do all of that, CJ Nikowski from Fox Sports 1 joins the show next. You're on episode number 45, the Julie Chassin Memorial Edition of the PDP.
Well, I've had the pleasure the last 2 years of working on MLB Whip Around, a nightly highlight show on Fox Sports 1. We've had a number of outstanding analysts, former players come through, Hall of Famers, you know, Pete Rose, but none better than the man we have on the show today, former big league pitcher CJ Nikowski. CJ, how you doing?
You know, Anthony, if you dissect that sentence, it basically sounded like you said I was better than Pete Rose. So you my favorite person in the world.
I mean, listen, you were a much better pitcher than Pete Rose. Okay, let's just...
maybe. You never know. You never know. That guy seemed like he could do about anything.
Yeah, we had a great dialogue at the end of one of the shows when Pete was on there last week where, you know, you were breaking down the top 5 pitchers in baseball right now. And, you know, and Pete said, yeah, we could even have all these guys. You can win with this team. And then CJ could even close for us and we'd still win.
I loved it. I love that he was willing to go there and have fun with it and make fun of me. And, you know how I am, always kind of self-deprecating about my career. But I love to have, the hit king chime in on that as well. So if you're going to get an insult, you might as well get it from Pete Rose.
I mean, and he can dish them out with the best of them, so it's all right.
Yeah. He was great, man. He was so much fun, and you never know what you're going to get, right? I mean, it was a little bit – I think we're all kind of wondering, you know, how is he going to be as an analyst? And, man, he was great. He was a ton of fun, and as you well know, the storytelling stuff was off the charts.
Yeah, well, what was your biggest takeaway from the first few episodes we had with Pete Rose? I mean, obviously just the avocado room, which is the Fox Sports equivalent of the green room and other places, just sitting there telling stories. And what was your favorite Pete Rose moment of the first few episodes?
You know, on TV when we're doing, you know, actually doing the show, I think it's just his willingness, or not even willingness, it's the fact that he loved talking baseball. And whether it was actually either on the show or not in the green room, he just loved being around guys and talking the game, which I thought was really cool. It kind of never gets away from you, even for him at 74 years old. I thought it was pretty neat that he loved doing that. But I also liked that he would make fun of guys, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
He's one of the few that kind of, you know, carries that reputation where you can get away with it. You know, similar, I think, not exactly, but I think you can make that kind of comparison to what Charles Barkley does on the NBA, on TNT, and the shows they have with Shaq and Ernie Johnson and those guys. But he's very opinionated, but it's not, you know, off the wall. I mean, he knows the game well. He still watches the game. And so listening to him kind of make fun of guys, you know, as Struble Cabrera gets his 1,000th hit, right? And he's like, hey, you know, that's way to go. You're only 3,000 or whatever away from me. You know, which I love. I mean, I love that he did that. Or he's getting on Joe Mauer for having – he has one home run, but he had no home runs at the time. Yeah. And he hit a triple in one of the highlights. And he's like, Joe, you got two triples and no home runs. Get some Wheaties. You know, like he couldn't wait. I mean, that is not something you would expect from a 74-year-old Pete Rose. So I think the fact that he was willing to have fun with it, but at the same time that he is still – way up on the game, has strong opinions about the game, but they're educated opinions. They're not completely off the wall, old man, the game has passed you, you don't know what you're talking about kind of stuff. He wasn't anything close to that for me.
Right. Now, and you yourself are one of the hardest working analysts in the game today. You live in Atlanta with your family, but you're out in LA doing whip around at least 2 to 3 times a week. You do countless radio shows at all hours of the night. You write for the Fox Baseball website, Jabo, just a bit outside. If you haven't checked it out, go to jabo.com. It's outstanding stuff. Rob Nyer is hosting it. There's a lot of really good baseball content on there. And you're the color man for our Saturday game on FS1. Like, do you ever sleep, CJ?
I wish. I always tell people that I wish I was a better player so I don't have to work so hard, you know, after my career. That would be kind of nice. Like, I'm watching these other guys on different networks or even maybe with ours that only have to do the studio show. I'm like, God, that'd be kind of nice. That'd be nice if I, you know, that's all I had to do. But I've never been afraid of work. You know, I grew up in a blue-collar family. My father was in the military. My mother worked, you know, pretty much my whole life as a secretary. And it was just something he always ingrained in me. My dad didn't know baseball enough to teach it to me, but he played it with me. But, you know, the message was clear. You know, whatever you're going to do, you're going to work hard at it. And I'm not afraid of work. And I like working. Every once in a while, I probably spread myself a little bit too thin. I'm like, I really need a day, or I really need a drink. You know, I have a couple of those kind of days where I've gone a little bit too hard. But I do like working, and I like being out there, and it's fun work to do. It's definitely, there's definitely worse jobs to have. So I enjoy doing it. And, you know, and being in LA, a lot of times when I'm there by myself, and if I'm staying in the hotel, you know, I could just be hanging out at night, or I could do a 3-hour radio show. So I'm like, well, I might as well just do the radio show. I might hear something or pick up something, or we have guests once in a while, and maybe something that's going to help me, you know, on the TV side. Or a lot of times I get the ideas of things I want to write about from doing radio shows.
CJ, whenever we have people who are especially of a national platform on the show, it almost feels like we have to apologize to them that we have to talk about the Colorado Rockies. So apologies, CJ, but we got to ask you about the Colorado Rockies. So the most recent, obviously, notable national moment, I guess, for the Rockies was this whole Troy Tulowitzki trade fiasco. But let's talk to just kind of in broader strokes about this season and how it's gone. Obviously, this team's going to struggle pitching. We know that franchise long. I mean, that's something that's nothing new. But with a new administration in charge, with an assemblage of talent even outside of Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez, guys that you can build around for the future going forward, like Nolan Arenado, I mean, what's your perception right now of this team, where they are? Jeff Breidich is a guy who maybe can change some things around from what they've been for the last 15 years. How do you view this organization? What do you think the stance, the level of this organization is right now?
You know, it does feel like kind of the same old story, right? Which is a little bit frustrating, is that how do you figure out to get the, you know, how do you get the right pitching in there? I mean, obviously there's no huge names, and having Kyle Kendrick opening day starter this year was probably a little bit discouraging, you know, right out of the chute. And so you'd like to see them be a little bit more competitive in who they brought in. And I know he was already in the organization, but I love to have a new general manager come in and be bold too, right? Because you can come in and clean up some other people's mistakes and you're not going to take blame for them. Right? It's like, what do we see in San Diego with AJ Preller? You know, he just went in and, yeah, I can do this, I can do that. It wasn't my mistake, so you're not admitting failure, right? But some organizations, I think, get stuck in a rut where they can't make the bold change because sometimes it's a bad reflection on the front office. So I think probably the personnel that they've brought in, I know they have a couple of young guys that that you want to see kind of maybe develop and see what's there and give them an opportunity, and that's probably the phase that they're in right now. But I think the biggest disappointment is just the lack of aggressiveness on what they brought in on the pitching side and not having some bigger names. I know it's a tough draw, and ultimately it has to be an overpay, right? I mean, you're either going to develop pitching or you're going to have to overpay for pitching. I know that's kind of a tough spot to be in. So I think they're in that same cycle. It just seems like very similar situation that we are in with the Rockies, where it's like, who can we count on to be a steady kind of the guy who's going to stop the losing streak in the rotation, always the guy that you can count on. And I still think it's a big mystery in what kind of pitcher works pitching endeavor, if any. And what is the kind of guy that you want to find? Is it a ground ball guy? Is it a guy with guys with better changeups, or is there a certain pitch that works better that you want to have? But I don't think anybody's completely figured that out yet.
Yeah, we know the one pitch does not work, the Greg Reynolds knuckle curve. That was the one that did not really play well.
That thing, remember how they played that up like it was like the Dice K gyro ball coming out of college for him. Oh, he throws this knuckle curve. They're going to be set.
That stuff cracks me up when people use that phrase. I mean, essentially knuckle curve is, people think like old school, like is it a knuckleball that curves? No, it's a curveball where guys just kind of put their knuckle up. I did the same thing, and it's just a curveball. It's just a different kind of grip that you're hoping to generate more rotation. You know, people say, would you tell? I said, I throw a curveball. Yeah, I had my knuckle up on it, but I never would say knuckle curves. Other people would. And the like little baseball cards and stuff would say it's a knuckle curve. It's a curveball. You're just kind of raising your finger on it, trying to get more rotation. But I think, you know, curveball seems like, and I've had limited exposure there, but curveball seems like that's not necessarily the pitch that you want to have there. Just because you're going to lose some of your break. I mean, listen, you guys know what's going on. I mean, I'm sure it breaks your heart to see what Colin McHugh is doing in Houston. Right?
Yes.
This is a guy that the Rockies just let go, right? I mean, they just let him walk. And a lot of organizations make that mistake. But I think when you're pitching starved, you look at that situation and what did we do wrong? How did we miss on that? I play with Colin McHugh when he's in the minor leagues of the Mets, and I liked him a lot. And I was like, gosh, this guy's got a great breaking ball. And he's found a home in Houston, and he's dealing. And I think it's moves like that that the Rockies have to really step back and examine and say, how did we mess this up?
Yeah, that was one of Dan O'Dowd's last maneuvers as a GM. Yeah. So now that he can talk about it on MLB Network and make sure to let everyone knows that, you know,
yeah, that's nice.
What a great job he did in Denver. But CJ, I ran the numbers. In your two appearances at Coors Field, you're one of 22 pitchers all time with a win and a perfect 0.00 ERA in Denver. So since you clearly have it figured out, what was your secret when you had to pitch in Denver? You pitched once in 1998 with the Astros and once in 2004 with the Atlanta Braves. So what's your secret?
Limited exposure. Limited exposure. Get in and get out, because if you stay there too long, it's a career ruiner for you. Unless you're coming in on a big contract, doesn't matter, then you're going to get tons of opportunity. But yeah, it's funny. People always ask, and that conversation comes up, right? Yeah, Mike Hampton. But, you know, people come up and, you know, like, I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't there long enough, man. It's funny. I mean, you talk about, and we joke about how it was only an inning and a third. The third of an inning came in 2004, I believe, and I threw one pitch. I came in to face Jeremy Burnett and threw a fastball. It was kind of up and in. I like throwing my sinker up and in, and he flew out to right field. We were down at the time. We came back and took the lead, and I was done. And I got a one-pitch win. And this is completely unofficial, but I have like a lot of unofficial records that I like to claim. And one of them is I believe that I am the only person to ever have a one-pitch win in Major League Baseball and in the MPB, the Japanese Professional League, because I turned that trick one other time in Japan. So it's unofficial. Anthony, I don't even think you could figure that one out. I don't think.
Sounds like a challenge.
That sounds like a challenge, CJ. I could probably figure that out.
Well, if you want the challenge, then I have another one for you. So one of my other unofficial records is that I believe that I have collected the most playoff shares without actually ever playing in the postseason. So that's another one that you have to work on. I have four. I've received a check in the offseason for being on teams that went to the postseason, though I was never activated on the postseason. So that's you'll have the rest of your weekend filled with trying to figure out some nonsense right there.
You got to figure this out by Monday. If you don't figure it out by Monday, I'm going to be so disappointed in you.
Everything that I've come to know about Anthony Masterson will be a lie. CJ, we wanted to get your take on, we were talking about something 10, 15 minutes ago about the current state of Major League Baseball in one certain respect. The Miami Marlins this week announced that their general manager, Dan Jennings, is going to take over as manager of that team. And there were some interesting comments made by Chip Hale, the Arizona Diamondbacks, shortly thereafter. And I wanted to get your take on this because it seems like it's something that not a whole lot of people have talked about who have been in baseball, but I think a lot of people probably feel very similarly about, which is nowadays when there is a major league managing opening, teams, it seems like, just think, well, why don't we get some scrappy, gritty guy who is kind of a fan favorite, who has little to no professional coaching or managing experience, and just throw him into this job. The Rockies did it. I mean, Walt Weiss was coaching at Regis High School, so that didn't exactly inspire confidence. But, I mean, Craig Counsell obviously gets a job in Milwaukee. We've seen it, you know, Brad Ausmus was the Tigers hire. The Chicago White Sox did it with Robin Ventura. What is the feeling around the game right now in this? Because, you know, what Chip Hale said is, if you're a player, you bust your hump in the minor leagues, you get done, you don't make it to the big leagues, you do make it to the big leagues. If you realize, I really want to be a manager, that's what I want to do, then you start that whole road over again. You go bust your ass in the minor leagues to be a coach, to be a manager. And nowadays, it seems like it doesn't even matter. I mean, Kevin Cash maybe is the exception in Tampa Bay, but what's the feeling around baseball of all these guys just getting handed major league managerial jobs, really with no business having them?
It's an interesting phenomenon. And I think, as far as, you know, what Chip Hale said, trying to coach and get to the major league level is 10 times more difficult than trying to play and get. I mean, think about it, right? How many players
exactly
does the average team go through? You got 25 players. You're going to see, what, at least 35, probably 35 to 40 that will see major league time, you know, for every organization every year. You have, it used to be six coaches. I guess you're up to about eight now. But the, you know, you have about, let's say, about eight coaches and not a ton of turnover when you look at it compared to player turnover. So as high as the odds are against you of making it to the major league, they get even higher as far as you sticking. They are significantly more stacked against you if you want to coach. So, you know, people have asked me, and I'm sure asked all players, oh, would you like to go coach? No, because I got to go get on a bus, you know, wherever in Montana and do that for years, and maybe I get a chance and maybe not. And you could go, you know, 10, 12 years and never get to the big leagues, and you're not going to make much money along the way. And it's kind of a tough business to get into. But as far as teams, you know, making these decisions that they've made, some of these I like. I played with Brad Ausmus for a long time. It makes a ton of sense to me. I had zero issue with a guy like him sliding in because he was working in a front office. You know, he's a bright guy. He's an Ivy League guy, but not even that. He's got the nice kind of combination of being bright but also having a little bit of that, you know, grit, competitiveness to him because he doesn't like to lose. But I think he's a rare combination. But as far – I mean, the Dan Jennings stuff is – you know, I like Dan Jennings a lot. I met him this past off season and spent some time with him. He's such a good dude. And he's a baseball guy, but this doesn't make a ton of sense. And I think it's probably short term. I think the Marlins would never want to admit the fact, but I think the reality is they don't want to pay three guys, right? Because they're already paying Mike Redmond. They're still paying Ozzie Guillen. Are they really going to go out and hire another guy and say, yeah, we're paying three managers this year? For me, that looks really bad when you're looking at Tom, when you're looking at Jeffrey Lurie and saying, dude, what are you doing? How is it that you're paying three managers? How many bad decisions have you been making with this organization? So I think it probably goes more to that than actually finding the right qualified guy. But it's probably not going to work out, I would guess, which I hate for him because I like him. But this took it to the next level as far as off-the-wall kind of hirings. The coaches – but the managers that don't have experience, some of them I like, some of them kind of iffy on, but that's the way the teams have decided to go. But to take a guy out of the front office takes us to a whole new level.
Yeah, and Tyler and I are minor league veterans. You know, we've been in the minor leagues for a few years doing broadcasting there and seeing how hard
not as
those,
players, neither of
no,
us
not
are
as
good
players,
for that.
Like, as broadcasters, obviously, but seeing how hard those managers work there, like they're not doing it for the love of the game. They're doing it because they want to move up eventually. A lot of those guys want to become major league managers. And with the exception of Kevin Cash, we don't see that happen that often. When we were in the Carolina League in 2009 to 2010-ish, Joe McEwing was the big name. He was the Winston-Salem Dash manager at that point. And everyone said, oh, well, Joe McEwing, of course, is going to be coaching the major leagues one day. He's going to be the hot ticket. You know, he's already done very, very well. His teams were always excellent, and they had a lot of success. And he got bumped up a little bit, but when the White Sox job came open, he was considered, but eventually was settled for a coaching job, and they gave it to Robin Ventura, who had no experience. So it's so weird how that can actually happen, that these teams aren't giving these guys that they've put a lot of time and money into the organization in developing some of their best prospects a chance to manage the big league level.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know what, Anthony, those are like – because I think the reality is those are two different jobs. I think that you will identify coaches and former players, and you'll see them as, man, this guy would be perfect at AAA. This guy would be perfect in even low A or high A, whatever it might be, rookie ball, because even those jobs are different. But when you're managing in AAA, it's closer to managing in the big leagues, but you're still developing players. When you're managing or coaching at the lower levels, you're taking some really raw guys.
Right.
And trying to turn them into professionals. That's not the same job as managing in the big leagues. Now you go to managing the big leagues, and in-game management is important. Running a bullpen is important. You got to remember, at the minor league level, guys aren't necessarily even running bullpens as much because they're being told what to do by front offices now. And so that their managerial legs are kind of getting cut out from under them. So you're not even seeing managers get developed necessarily in the minor leagues anymore, because there's so much coming from the player development people and saying exactly who they want to play when it comes to filling out the lineup, who we want pitching, and so how you're going to work your bullpen. A lot of it is dictated by the front office. So even managers are not getting developed as much at the minor league level. But then when you get to the big leagues, if you, let's just say, using the example of taking, say, Andy Haynes, who is in AAA with the Marlins right now, like, why is he not a guy that is in line to get that job? And this is not a knock personally on him, but they may look at him as just a guy who's great at AAA, but is not a manager at the big leagues because it's actually a little bit, maybe significantly a different skill set. And one of the biggest ones is your ability to manage the media, right? You have to do that. That was the one thing. I played for Joe Torre in New York, and he's a huge name, but I would say, you know, he was an okay manager. He wasn't a great manager. He was surrounded by great players. He wasn't a great bullpen management guy. He was outstanding with the press, and he was outstanding at managing that team specifically because of all the high-priced players. He kept things very simple, and he was a perfect fit in New York, and that worked. And so I don't know if you can necessarily correlate the two where you say, okay, this guy's in AAA, so he's next in line. I don't think it's necessarily like working at most places where, you know, an average job for you have to kind of work your way up the ladder. You kind of do in baseball, but it doesn't necessarily mean if you're going to A-ball, to AA, to AAA, that your next move is going to be at the big league level. I think that's probably why we're seeing some of this kind of stuff. You get pegged a little bit, just like a player, just like a person in an office, wherever it may be. They'll look at your skill set. You get pegged into a certain kind of guy, and a lot of organizations may not see you as major league material, which is frustrating. I had the same situation with a guy who was a former teammate who was a pitching coach in the minor league system for years. And I remember seeing him at winter ball near the end of my career when I was still playing. You know, they fired, whatever happened, the position opened up at the big league level, and he couldn't even get an interview. You know, and he had been there for however long, and they weren't even considering interviewing him for the AAA pitching job. And so he, you know, he left. He ultimately left the organization, and you kind of get pigeonholed, and these jobs are really tough to come by. And more organizations, I think, want guys that they can control.
CJ, one thing I want to ask you about real quick. Last night, Brewers pitcher Will Smith, the Fresh Prince of Milwaukee, was tossed out of a game for a foreign substance on his non-throwing arm while in Atlanta. Tell me about, you know, as a major league veteran, as a guy who has seen this happen, I'm sure, countless times, what's the feeling inside the game when something like that happens? I mean, it's, you know, like, you know, when Michael Pineda did it, it was just so blatantly obvious about it. What is the feeling when it happens now? Is it just kind of like guys shrug it off, like, come on, man, put in some more effort to it at least?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I thought was, what are you doing? Like, it's sitting right on your forearm. He has no sleeves or anything, and it's shiny, right? It's shiny. I'm watching. I'm
exactly.
Watching in Atlanta, and it looked like he had like a power bracelet on or something. Like he's like one of the Wonder Twins, and I was like, "What are you doing, dude? Like, you have to make an attempt to hide that." Like, I think guys sometimes forget that, you know, there's 100 cameras on them nowadays. I mean, it's really difficult to get away with anything, and those cameramen are taught to be hawks and try to find anything that they can and make sure they're not missing any shots. And I was just shocked. Put it on your hat, put it on your belt, put it on your glove, and be very discreet when you go to touch that area to try to get some tackiness on your hands. I mean, it almost seemed like for Will Smith in the postgame comments were, you know, I'm just trying to get a better grip. Like, why is everyone giving me a hard time? Because it's against the rules. Like, there's rules that say you can't do that. That's why everyone's giving you a hard time. It's almost like,
I just,
you know,
stole this television. What's wrong with that? Why is everybody so upset with me?
I wanted to watch a show. What's the big deal? Like, people don't understand. No, there's rules. Like, you can't just do what you want. And I think that's actually maybe even a bigger society problem, that people believe that the rules all of a sudden don't apply to them anymore in certain situations. So you can't do that. You have to be discreet. It happens a ton. It happens a ton. I would do it in courses at times in my career, especially if I was pitching, say, in Chicago in April, where you know, the air is, you know, it's cold and everything is slick and it's hard to grip the ball. But the thing that maybe surprises me the most is when I hear a hitter say they're okay with it, because they'd rather a pitcher have good control than get hit with a pitch.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman said that after the game.
Freddie Freeman said it, yeah. It's shocking, because to me, and I remember we did this last year when Pineda did it, and it was, I can't remember who was on the show with us, but having the conversation, Marlon Byrd has said it to me in the past that he didn't mind, and I'm telling you, oh, it was Gabe. And he's like, I don't mind as much. I was like, how much of an advantage could it possibly be, Gabe Kapler? I was like, let me tell you something. You can tell me I could use pine tar every night, you know, for a curveball or a slider. Oh, my gosh, what a huge difference. I don't know if you saw the pitch that Will Smith threw. I think he hit, I forgot who he hit it, maybe Simmons or somebody on an 0-2 slider.
Yeah.
I mean, he just pulled the crap out of it down and in, because he probably had too much pine tar or whatever sticky stuff he was using on his finger, because it absolutely helps your breaking ball. That ball will spin more when you're basically taking away or adding, I should say, I'm not a scientist, adding friction, right? Is that right? Yeah. Where you're, you know, so that ball is spinning more. And to me, it's you got to be better than that. You got to be smarter than that. It's like no street smarts. You can't just put it on your neck. You can't just put it like on your arm. You got to hide it somewhere, and you got to be discreet.
The richest thing, though, was Freddie Gonzalez calling out Will Smith for doing it, when the Braves have been notorious for pulling that kind of stuff, especially when Craig Kimbrell was there. A game against the Rockies, right. Actually, he came out with, looks like his hat was just like dumped in like Vaseline, and then he let him keep pitching with that. So that's been the rumors for the Braves for a long, long time, that they've been doing that kind of stuff with their bullpen. I mean, you could probably attest to that better than anybody.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely – all guys do it. It doesn't even go – I shouldn't say all guys. That's not fair. Most guys will do it. Most guys will look for an edge in the game, and they push the limits. And so – but at the same time, if you're going to be really discreet, I'm actually okay with you calling a guy out, because that's where you got to draw the line a little bit. Because, you know, like, it's one of those things that everyone just kind of doesn't say anything and looks the other way. But if you're just going to be blatant about it, and it's almost like you're challenging the team, like, I dare you to say something about what I'm doing right now. And you know, you don't want that getting in your hitter's head. Freddie is not going to, and teams are not going to sit there and look with binoculars and try to find out if a guy's got, you know, pine tar on his belt or he's got a little bit in his glove. But if you're going to sit there and have it on your neck, if you're going to sit there and have it in your arm, like Clay Buchholz, same thing. Remember the one arm in Toronto was like glowing, you know, like put it on both arms if you're going to be that blatant. So it looks like, you know, it matches. But I think if it gets really blatant, what you don't want to happen is that everybody's talking about it and you don't say anything, right? Cause think about the other side. Say the cameras pick it up. And they're like, wow, look at his arm and look what he's doing. And Freddie doesn't say anything about it, then he looks kind of dumb doing it. So I think if you're going to be blatant, you got to call him out. I think if you asked Freddie Gonzalez his preference, that he would just have hit it better as opposed to actually him not doing it.
He is CJ Nitkowski. CJ, we'll get you out of here. Follow him on Twitter at CJ Nitkowski. He is going to be on the call on Saturday on Fox Sports 1. Check your local listings, channel 219 on DirecTV. That's pretty much all I know. He'll be there.
Yeah,
doing
maybe we'll
the
get
Braves.
Will Smith to join us. He probably got the day off.
The Braves Brewers game on Saturday on FS1, so check him out there. Give him a follow on Twitter, one of our favorite follows on Twitter. And I'll probably see you next week at the Fox Lot.
Yep, I'll be there Monday to Wednesday next week, brother.
All right, I'll be there. CJ, thank you so much for doing this. He is CJ Nitkowski.
Thanks,
follow
CJ.
Him on Twitter. He is awesome.
My pleasure, guys. That was fun.
Huge thanks to CJ Nitkowski from Fox Sports 1 for joining us. Not only for joining us, but for suffering through working with Anthony on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah,
really
more than
man.
You do. So imagine what he has to go through.
Been there. Not fun. Not a fun experience. Especially having to see Anthony like every day. Torture. Awful.
Yeah,
worst thing I've ever done in my life.
Going. Just keep going, man.
That was great, though. I mean, listening to him talk about how it's such a – I think, like – you know, if we saw a whole bunch of Fortune 500 companies all of a sudden lose CEOs and then just like hire guys who work in like car dealerships, I'd be like, what in the hell is going on here? And that's sort of what goes on when these managers just get like, okay, so you've got a little bit of experience in the thing that you'll be doing, but not really have this job.
Yeah.
What? I thought it was a very astute observation, though, that he thinks the Marlins just don't want to be paying three guys for that managerial job, which they would have been had they hired somebody else.
Right.
So but that was really interesting stuff.
No, and... I love I forgot about Super Joe McEwing. Like,
remember Super Joe?
He was the guy. It was like, oh yeah, well, Joe McEwing's going to manage in the big leagues. He still might, of course. He's the third base coach for the White Sox still. So if they keep sucking and Ventura gets canned, like, he has a good chance of taking over at least in the interim basis. So, but he was always that, like, oh yeah, well, Joe McEwing, of course. Like, his teams were always so good, though.
Yeah.
Even when the talent wasn't really. You know? The White Sox didn't have the best farm system at that point. They had a decent farm system. They had just drafted Sale at that point, and he, you know, was in the Carolina League for all of about 2.5 weeks and struck out everybody he faced.
Man, remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that?
I got to see one of his outings against the Pelicans in Winston-Salem, and I think he faced four batters, threw 11 strikes, and got 3 strikeouts.
I think he only made like 5 appearances.
No, he did. Like he made like 3.5 weeks in the minors before getting called up.
He was the 13th pick in 2010 and was not there for long. Kevin Cash, by the way, was the other guy I was trying to think of who has some minor league coaching experience. Chris Sale, 4 games in Winston-Salem, 7 in Charlotte, and then to the big leagues. Not bad.
Chris Sale was, I think, probably the best player I saw in my 2 years in the Carolina League. That guy's going to be just dominant in the big leagues one day. And then it was like 2 weeks later, he was dominant in the big leagues from high A ball.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So big thanks to CJ for joining the show. Again, you can give him a follow at CJ Nitkowski on Twitter. You can catch him this weekend in that Brewers Braves game. Yeah, like you said, Will Smith will probably have the day off. He could just go hang out in the booth.
Amble up onto the booth and talk. Talk Fresh Prince of Milwaukee.
A few things we wanted to cover before we get out of here today. The Rockies have removed left-handed pitcher Tyler Matzek from competitive work. Tyler Matzek is, as of right now, apparently done pitching in a competitive setting. And this is not anything new to Tyler Matzek. Matzek is a very interesting case in that the Rockies have tried this before for him. And it has worked out before. They have alluded to the fact that maybe he's fallen into some of his old mechanical habits that really got him into trouble. But, I mean, what we saw from Tyler Matzek over his last handful of times out, his last 2 outings, especially in the big leagues, and then his 1 AAA start before the Rockies decided that they were going to send him away from competitive action for a while. It's not the Tyler Matzek that we grew to know toward the end of last season. It's not the Tyler Matzek who climbed to the big leagues last year with a really good start in AAA Colorado Springs.
And who earned it, too.
Right, exactly. Walt Weiss said after the Rockies removed Matzek from his scheduled start on Monday before he made that start, they lifted him from the lineup. Weiss told the Denver Post, quote, "We're taking him out of competition for a bit." That was all. Matzek said that it was kind of a mental thing, he told our good pal Nick Groke of the Post a couple of weeks ago. And so we're hoping for the best for Tyler Matzek, a really, really good guy and really fun to watch when he's on. And hopefully this is just one of those things where he needs to go clear his head. I had this conversation with a couple of guys I work with the other day. In baseball, you're so much better off just being an idiot. Like if you have no self-awareness. Exactly. Because you're going at it every day or every 5 days if you're a starter. And if you're a guy who thinks about it too much, if you're a guy who's too bright, you're never going to get anything done. I had an interview with LaTroy Hawkins once last year for a story for Rockies Magazine where he said, when I was a starter, I could never get myself right because if I had a bad start, I thought about it
over and over
for 5 days. And that is how those guys are. The really introspective, the really self-aware, the really bright guys are that way. And for Tyler Matzek, I think sometimes that may be the struggle that he battles is that he gets caught up in that in his own head. And really, really hope the best for Tyler Matzek because he's so much fun to watch, such a good guy. And I have no doubt that he's going to be back and he's going to be successful. But the Rockies really could use him right now. And and hopefully he goes and is able to get himself
the Rockies
right.
Really need him. I mean, the starting staff right now is – hit or miss, let's just say.
To say the least.
Mostly hit in
terms of what opposing offenses do to them.
Hi-oh.
Hi-oh.
And Tyler Matzek proved last year an ERA just over 4 in a number of starts with the Rockies. He had a complete game shutout thrown in there. He proved that he can get hitters out at the major league level. And he proved that he can do it, and he can do it without walking a bunch of guys, too. So it wasn't just that, oh, well, you're still dealing with 5 walks per 9 innings with Tyler Matzek the last few years. Yes, he had that problem back in 2011, stepped away for a couple of months, came back, and then worked his way back into becoming one of the better pitchers in the system. And we saw what he can do when given the opportunity to do so at the highest level. So I think you're right. I think we're going to see him back by the end of the year. I think he's going to be back to what he was last season. You have to have faith that he's going to be able to go and get himself right, whatever he needs to do, and then come back and be the guy that we saw last year. Right now, you are always kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop with Tyler Matzek because you knew these problems had manifested themselves in the past, and you knew those problems, the problems were there that they could easily come back. You know, it's not like, well, he, you know, had an arm injury, but he got surgery and now he's going to be fine.
Right.
It was something that could always be there. The specter of it was always there behind Tyler Matzik. And he was able to deal with it very, very well for about 3 years, which is awesome. Because those things can come back at a moment's notice. You know, he could, you know, Rick Ankiel was the guy, the poster child for it, where, you know, he was a dominant starter, walked a lot of guys, but, you know, always struck out a lot of guys too. And then in the playoffs came, six wild pitches or whatever in two innings, and he could never pitch again.
Ugh.
So,
that's rough.
Yeah, you know, that's why you worry about those kind of control issues with Matzik, because more than likely it was not mechanical, it was mental. And so
right.
That's why whenever, you know, he would walk a couple of guys in a row, I think Weiss was always very quick with the hook, just so it wouldn't snowball into four, five, six walks, seven walks in an outing. And I think right now he kind of got too far down in his own head that right now it doesn't matter what he does, it's going to turn into four, five, six, seven walks in an outing. So I think this is a good mental break for him to take a couple of weeks, a month, you know, hopefully not as much as 2 months, but if he needs to take it, that's fine. And get back and get right, because he's still young. The Rockies need him going forward, and they need him to be the guy that we saw last year.
Hey, one other thing, one other quick update that I provided to all of you mongrels on Twitter yesterday, 2 days ago. Kyle Freeland.
Oh, the Kyle Freeland update. Hey, where is Anthony. That, by the way? Is a Kyle Freeland update here? I heard it was late.
Kyle Freeland update, Anthony. Brian Kilpatrick, I hate you. No, and so Kyle Freeland is still in extended spring training, and Scottsdale does not have a timetable for his return. His assignment to a full season minor league team is still battling shoulder fatigue, is throwing as I understand it, but is not as of right now on track to just head to a minor league assignment soon. When we did the bloggers panel prior to the start of the season, somebody said, throw out a bold, like a crazy prediction. And I said, you know, all things equal, if Kyle Freeland stays healthy, I think he's in the rotation by the end of the year. And people went insane. And now everybody is really enjoying mocking me for that prediction. That's what a bold prediction segment is for, you lunatics.
Bold prediction.
What if I would have said, like,
Rockies will win 75 games.
Exactly. Bold prediction. I bet Nolan Arenado makes the lion's share of starts at third base this year. So, yeah, I was wrong on my crazy prediction. But Kyle Freeland, I mean, hopefully he is on the road back to health, because not something you want to see. Shoulder fatigue obviously is a lot better to hear than some sort of shoulder injury. But we'll keep you updated on anything we hear there. Where Kyle Freeland is not throwing is where John Gray is throwing and is finally having some success. Last night, John Gray, Rockies top prospect, for the first time this season, first time since August of last year, pitched into the seventh inning in a start. I talked to him after that start last night. He beat Round Rock 5-1, outpitched Anthony Renato in that game, who's the number 11 Rangers prospect. And Gray seems like he is getting back to a good place with himself mentally, with his mechanics. It looks like he is finally starting to turn that corner. He's no stranger really to starting slowly, and that's, I think, something that benefits him. But last night he said, you know, he's throwing with a lot of confidence now, being able to go to a slider in weird counts, being able to go to the changeup in different counts, because that mixes guys up, and then all of a sudden they don't know what to expect from you. So I really liked what I heard from John Gray last night. It feels like he is kind of getting to the point where he feels like, all right, things are coming together here. And that's a really, really good sign for the Rockies.
A month of April, Gray in four appearances mostly starts. He had the one on opening day where he relieved Jorge De La Rosa. 0-3, a 1070 earned run average.
Yeah.
Opponents at 400 off him. But in four May starts, the record's at 2-1, the ERA 3.18. The strikeouts aren't as high as you would like to see, 14 strikeouts and 22 2/3. He's only walked four batters, though, in his four starts, and opponents hitting .233 off him. So he has been very good. Last night pitched into the seventh inning for the first time since last August, I believe.
Right, August 21st.
6-2. Yeah.
I think August 2nd of last year, actually.
Yeah, 6 2/3, one run unearned on six hits, one walk, three strikeouts. And he said against that Round Rock lineup that included Josh Hamilton.
Right,
included
fourth best lineup in the Pacific Coast.
Big leaguers like Rougned Odor, Jake Smolinski, guys who have been in the big leagues before. So he was able to pretty much dispatch them without much traffic on the base paths too, which is a very, very good sign for him.
Gave up a double to Hamilton the first time he saw him, then retired him on flyouts the next two times. I did ask John Gray toward the end of that interview last night. I said, you know, you're not striking out a ton of people. Coming out of college, obviously, everybody was obsessed with, oh, he hits triple digits. The fastball is amazing. And John Gray has acknowledged, yeah, you know, that's true. But in college, you pitch once every 7 days. It's going to be a lot different when you pitch once every 5 days. You don't have the time to rebuild strength between starts like that. Does it concern him at all that the strikeout numbers have dipped? He posted strikeout per nine inning ratios of over 10 batters in his last year at OU and his 2013 start with Grand Junction and Class A advanced Modesto. Grand Junction, of course, in the rookie level Pioneer League. Last year was 8.2 strikeouts per nine. This year, after his start yesterday, it's a 6.9 strikeouts per nine innings. So not blow away dominant strikeout numbers, but he said right now it doesn't concern him because, quote, it's all about getting outs right now. If I can find a way to mix them in with what I'm doing now, maybe use that fastball with two strikes, that'd be awesome. It's still something I need to work on, but for right now, it's just all getting outs. To me, I mean, yeah. I like that because it suggests John Gray doesn't really care the way that the outs are coming. If he goes out, pitches into the seventh, and only gives up one unearned run, he's going to be happy with it no matter what.
Yeah, and that's fine. If you want to get the first 2 months out of the way, get your comfort level at a certain level, then you know, once you are fully comfortable, then your strikeouts will come because you'll start pitching the way that you did when you were the third overall pick, when you were, you know, what got you to that point. And right now I like the fact that his splits are getting a little bit more normalized. He's holding opponents right now to a .312 batting average, but it's .282 against lefties and .333 against righties. And you have to imagine that split is going to probably flip considering his stuff that he has, his triple-digit fastball, his hard-breaking slider. I think that would be a lot more effective against right-handed batters. So right now, a small sample size, you can take it and see that. Remember, early in the year, it was like .450 against righties and like .360 against lefties. So those numbers are coming down for John Gray right now, and it's been a very, very good sign that he's been able to withstand that first barrage of crap in the month of April and now come back and pitch like the pitcher that we think he's going to be going forward in the month of May. In a very tough offensive environment as well, like he's pitched in Albuquerque this year. And in these in the month of May, two of his starts have come at home. He's also pitched at Sacramento and at Round Rock. So, you know, a lot of offense coming in those ballparks in that league, but he is pretty much normalizing his numbers right now in the month of May.
And probably a good time for us to tell you, John Gray will join the 46th edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast next week. We're going to be talking with the Rockies' top prospect, and so really excited about that. Get an update on how he's feeling going into the latter stages of May and into the full heart of the minor league schedule and, you know, maybe the major league schedule soon, depending on how John Gray goes over the next handful of weeks. So really excited to talk to John Gray next week. I'm really excited. I have a one-year-old's birthday party tomorrow, which is going to be the most adorable thing I've ever seen, I'm sure. So, you know, it's going to be a fun little weekend up here.
Yeah, good for you, man. Have fun.
Thanks, buddy. What do you got going on?
This weekend, I have got a tux fitting tomorrow.
Ooh,
I am the best man in a wedding coming up at the end of June.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I got that going on tomorrow. I got one of my fraternity brothers coming down from San Francisco, staying with me this weekend. So that'll be fun. He gets in later tonight. Haven't seen him since my last birthday, actually, last May. So haven't seen him in a while. It'll be fun to see him. And, not much else. I'm going to maybe try to get on Sunday, if we have time. I think Lake Elsinore is in town. Maybe try to go see a Storm game.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
Lake Elsinore Stadium is awesome.
And that is one of the places in the Cal League I really, really want
to
hit.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess it's the closest one to LA probably. I mean, of course, California League, they have like Rancho Cucamonga, High Desert, Inland Empire. Those are all in that general vicinity. But I think Lake Elsinore is technically the closest one to where I am right now.
Look at you.
I know.
Baseball guy.
Just a baseball guy. Just playing baseball, watching baseball.
Just a baseball guy.
But seriously, guys,
never been in no harm.
Tune in MLB Whip Around. It is an awesome
show.
Do
it.
We've got, I think tonight we've got Mark Sweeney and Frank Thomas on.
The Big Hurt.
The Big Hurt.
They called him.
Yeah. If you've seen on Twitter, you can follow our buddy Craig Goldstein. He is in charge of the power rankings on FoxSports.com. And FoxSports.com are doing power rankings a little bit differently this season because power rankings by themselves can get very boring and very repetitive very quickly. Just when you say like, oh, this team is good because of this, and the second team is good because of this, but they're not as good as the first team, that can get boring. So what FoxSports.com decided to this year, they were going to do power rankings based on Baseball Prospectus's playoff odds. So from the beginning of the year to right now, like, and, you know, Baseball Prospectus runs their simulations, you know, 50,000 times. And however often a certain team makes the playoffs throughout their simulations, that's the number that they're given for their playoff odds. And so they rank them like that. My favorite thing in the world on Twitter is when people don't understand how those playoff or those power rankings work.
Yeah, it's so great.
Because even though Craig explains it in very large print at the top of the page every single time, people have not grasped the reality of how those power rankings are different this year. And it is my favorite thing when Craig just defeats people on Twitter about it. And last night, Frank Thomas came barging into the room, name drop, for our meeting.
I imagine that's the only way that Frank Thomas can go into a room being that big, just barging.
Like, bust through the door like Hulk style a little bit, like the Kool-Aid man.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. Frank Thomas is here.
No, and he came in and he was like, what the hell is going on with these power rankings? How the hell are the Royals 11? I don't understand. I was like, Frank, well, they're actually based on I don't care. Bam. And I was like, oh, man. I wish Craig was here to hear Frank Thomas cursing his name to the heavens. So I hope Frank listens to this and knows that Frank Thomas hates his work.
I think that Craig hates me now, by the way.
What'd you do to Craig?
Craig and I, we met in Scottsdale, hung out with you, had a beer.
Is this because of the Friends thing?
And then I ranked my favorite Friends characters, and now Craig just seems so annoyed with me every time we interact on Twitter.
Well, it's because you're totally wrong.
I miss my Craig love.
You know what? If this Rocky
Dude, we can't rank them on attractiveness. Obviously, all of the women are going to beat Ross, but in terms of funny, idiotic sitcom characters, Ross was funny.
Oh,
what's wrong with you
disagree.
People?
Disagree.
Whatever.
Okay, no, if
too bad we're doing this right now, because this would have been a good
track. If the Rockies are 20 games out of first place in September, we are having an all-friends power-ranking show. We'll have Craig Goldstein on, and we will destroy you.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to have 2-on-1?
Yep.
Fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm going to bring on?
Really? So all the other times Craig Goldstein was on, and it was 2-on-1 against me. That was fun. We'll taste your own medicine, Tyler. Deal.
Okay, then I'm going to bring on David Schwimmer. It's not like he has anything to do.
No,
like,
I think I called David on this podcast before.
Hey, we do this Rockies podcast, and I'm trying to hold up Ross as being a funny character. Do you want to come
and
on?
Be like, oh, cool. I'm totally down. Like, I'm not doing
anything. Sure, I don't have anything to do. I'm just collecting millions of dollars in Friends royalty checks.
God, I'm sure he is. No, I think I've told you on this podcast many times that I've gotten David Schwimmer enough that I look like him from different people that I almost have to believe it now.
You know who I get, and I have to believe it now as well, and I hate it, is Adam Goldberg.
Okay.
Who is actually also on Friends, was Chandler's roommate.
Chandler's roommate. He's a weird roommate.
He's also the guy who gets stabbed very slowly in Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
And I was walking down Fifth Avenue yesterday in New York. I had a meeting, and I was walking past this billboard for the Jim Gaffigan show.
Street Drop.
Street Drop. And he is on the Jim Gaffigan show. So I was very excited about that. That, like, you know, coming on up in the world, me and Adam Goldberg. But I hate it because Adam Goldberg, to me, you know, he kind of looks like a Cro-Magnon man.
Well.
He's got, like, a very prominent brow. He's always frowning. He looks angry.
Hey, Tyler, if the shoe fits.
I don't like it.
You want to know what's funny? Really quickly. One of the stage hands yesterday on the show, like he came up to me and was like, man, I don't know if you've ever gotten this before, but like you look and sound like Elliot Gould. And I was like a young Elliot Gould. And I was like, that's funny because I've gotten David Schwimmer and then I get Elliot Gould who played David Schwimmer's father. On Friends.
Yeah. You're just an honorary Geller.
Apparently. So I was like, you know what? I'll take it.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't see it or get it, but the David Schwimmer thing blows my mind. Enough people have said it. Even Cam, our buddy Cam, said that when I posted a picture of me on Twitter, a couple months ago. He's like, so are you David Schwimmer? And I go, God. It's happened enough that I have to believe it, and I don't see it still. But
by the way, I have to figure out a way to cut this out and make it the hidden track now and make the rest of the show make sense.
No, no.
Because this is so great.
Yeah, okay. Rockies, anyway, the Rockies. They're a team.
John Gray joins the show next week, episode number 46 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. We're excited for that. And
Giants series this weekend.
Giants series this weekend.
Doubleheader on Saturday.
Yeah. Real lots of old-timey baseball.
Go check it out. Then, yeah, next week on the road, like at the Reds and at the Phillies. The Phillies apparently have a chance to win their 100th game ever against the Rockies in that series next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which I believe I saw yesterday. They would be the first team outside of the NL West with 100 wins all time against the Rockies.
Wow.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, think about that for a second.
Makes perfect sense. Awesome. Well, you know, that should be infuriating by next week. But, hey, that's what we do this for, because it's all infuriating. So until episode number 46, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Enjoy the rest of your week.
By the way, huge thanks to CJ Nankowski. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
CJ was great. CJ. Go check out our t-shirts at Humble Monster. We'll tweet the link out later today while everyone's talking about the Rockies-Giants game. Kyle Kendrick against Ryan Vogelsong. Ace off.
Best believe that. Ace off, Kyle Kendrick. Also, we keep saying week to week that we have new designs coming to Humble Monster, and we really do.
We really do.
We really do. Oh, I promise.
It's amazing that the Rockies have played the Giants so much this year and have missed Bumgarner, I think, every single time.
Yeah, that's luck.
Yeah.
That's like the one thing they've been lucky with so far. Yeah. Fun. All right. Talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.